Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound, get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducros.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome, you're listening to the Sports Wars right here on Blog Talk Radio, and hopefully here on YouTube.tv. We are your hosts for this evening, the one and only the Sports Wars. I'm Tristan Ducros. Along my side, as always, my partner in crime, Sean Ducros. So, Tristan, big week in mixed martial arts, and you know what? You got UFC 203 coming on. And, dude, you know what? It's funny because the main topic right now is about CM Punk. He's been all over UFC's live stream. And make no mistake about it, is that he is the talk of the card. You have four heavyweights on the card, but we ain't talking about that. We talking about CM Punk. Good, bad, or indifferent, we talking about it. And it's funny because what was it, Sean, that bloody elbow and everybody else, he'd be digging up a article and stuff like that. Just talk about it. And you and I, we talked about it. You don't need to dig up anything on CM Punk because there's already so many storylines that go with CM Punk leading us up to this fight against Mickey Gall. Am I right?
Absolutely. And to go in and figure out what's the issue about, you know what? How does Ohio allow CM Punk to fight when he hasn't met the requirements to turn pro at this level? To dig it up, I agree with him. It doesn't need to be done. It's just people looking for a way to make a headline. So to me, is the way that I break it down, whether I like CM Punk or not, the bottom line of it is that CM Punk is a professional, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There is no, how can I say this? There is a difference and then there isn't a difference in what goes on with professional wrestling or UFC. Because at the end of the day, you look at it, it's still a professional business. When you look at what CM Punk has done, he's taken real bumps. He's taken real punches occasionally. Yes, wrestling is a staged, choreographed event, whatever it may be. But it still has its real aspects of it. If he didn't get hurt, if he didn't take real bumps, I could see everybody's up in the arms about, wait a second, why is this guy even fighting in a professional MMA fight? Well, then I could get that. I could get behind that. But at the end of the day, he's trained in jiu-jitsu. Whether it was for fun or not, he trained in jiu-jitsu. He has some capabilities behind him to make him more of an opportunity. Are you risking his health? Probably. Because if it doesn't go his way and he gets choked out, it could go horribly wrong. Because Mickey Gall has the ability to finish this fight in T-minus 2 seconds. He has the ability, as he said, to distribute beautiful violence.
That's still funny that you say beautiful violence because nobody's giving CM Punk credit at all. And many people are talking about Mickey Gall, order for Mickey Gall to shut up the critics and silence everybody, is that you must, in Mickey Gall's eyes, he has to go in there, guns blazing, and finish the fight just like that. Because in many fans' eyes, including professional fighters' eyes, they honestly believe that if CM Punk wins, their sport becomes a laughing stock. And see, I disagree with that wholeheartedly because everybody deserves a chance, right? Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, somebody deserves to either prove naysayers wrong or to prove themselves that they can do it at an elite level. Phil Brooks is trying to do something that many athletes can't do at 37 years old.
You're looking at the fact that the last guy to step into the octagon at this age without any true mixed martial arts pedigree, if you will, was Herschel Walker in Strikeforce. He shocked the world.
But isn't it just amazing? All these so-called fighters or these MMA analysts, and nobody questions anybody else about how you transition or how you get to MMA. Because we have a fighter, and I even brought this up to you, was that isn't it ironic that we have a former UFC fighter friend that never once was a wrestler, a boxer, none of that. He was a football player. He started in a garage and became a former UFC fighter. So why is it any different that a former professional wrestler, pro wrestling, is looked down upon?
And that is an interesting statement that you make there. Because when you look at it, is that when we first heard about Phil Brooks transitioning, we were probably one of them and that bashed this whole idea. But when you sit back and you analyze it from a non-fan's perspective, and really dabble into Phil Brooks' transition to mixed martial arts, you can't knock it because not a lot of people have the balls to get hit in the face every day. He has the balls to get hit in the face at this opportune time. The only downside to this is the fact that he's facing a guy who's world-class in jiu-jitsu in Mickey Gall. That's the issue we have here.
Yeah, but really, are we really talking about that? Let's dig a little bit deeper, Sean. What about this? Is it really that big of a difference on paper? Is it really that big of a difference between the fact that Mickey Gall has had 5 fights and we're looking at CM Punk with 0? Let's pause for a reason, because you're looking at Mickey Gall, who has had 3 amateur fights, 2 professionals. So is this skill level really that much different between him and CM Punk? Let's look at that aspect. Not just because he has 5 fights underneath his belt, 2 professional, and CM Punk has none. Let's look at the quality of those fights. Let's look at the reality of those 3 amateur fights, which, in my eyes, was an absolute joke in a couple of them. Then he's also fight a handout in his first professional fight against a guy named Jackson, who's more of a celebrity mainstay than anything, not a fighter. So let's look at that skill level for a minute. Mickey Gall just has just the amount of stuff to lose than CM Punk.
If Mickey Gall loses to CM Punk, this is a lose-lose situation. If Mickey Gall loses to CM Punk at UFC 203, we will probably not see Mickey Gall for the foreseeable future. Mickey Gall defeats CM Punk. All the naysayers and the people that have come out of the woodwork to bash Phil Brooks, the hack journalist, if you will find it their mission and their objective to destroy any credibility Phil Brooks had going into mixed martial arts. His career will be destroyed before it ever even takes off.
All this is very true.
Just because he's got more on the line than anybody else at this point in time. If you're Phil Brooks, sweating bullets right now. If you're Phil Brooks, you hope the report about him being 200 pounds as of last week going into this cut is not true. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend with the weigh-ins. What he looks like going forward.
Because if you ask him now what he looks like, he's going to look like who? A poor man's what?
Poor man's Jake Gyllenhaal. The guy's got a personality for days. I'll give him that. He knows how to talk. But can he fight? That is the question. And the other one that will be answered is, can Alistair Overeem finally overcome his inability to win the big one in the UFC as he takes on Stipe Miocic?
Because he's clearly has had an up and down career in the UFC.
Absolutely.
You know, when you look at this heavyweight matchup between Stipe Miocic versus Alistair Overeem, I look at it, and then I look at the other fight with Fabricio Werdum and Travis Brown. And I'm left with more questions than what the reality of the fight is going to be. Because I look at it, and I think, does youth prevail over veteran status? And I try to understand. So when we look at Miocic and Brown being the younger of the two, Overeem and Werdum being the older of the two, I also see that Travis Hopper Brown is just a fringe player in this situation, because he has been that fighter that has been in title contention but hasn't been able to get over that hump. There's a saying in Major League Baseball that we have heard over years, and it has simply been the fact that you're called a triple AA player. That's the way I see Travis Brown. If he beats Werdum and he steps inside of that octagon cage and he faces a guy like Miocic and Overeem, it does not go well for Brown. Because the way that the heavyweight division is set up is that it's really getting old. And it's funny because you look at 34, Sean, and we're going to be 32 here in a couple of months.
Don't remind me, dude. Why would you have to go there?
Because just think about this. If 34 is really that old, where does that cement us?
We're old. That's where it cements us. We're
right.
Old.
So how do you at some point, Sean, get some kind of youth movement in the heavyweight division?
You can't.
Because Derek Lewis is the only guy that is relatively young. At 3 years, and you're looking at Sean, he's 31 years old. And really, that's where you're going? 31 years old. 3 years different between Stipe Miocic. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that basically the Werdum fight is going to cement the number one contender fight for whoever wins in the Stipe Miocic versus Alistair Overeem. But you're looking at the fact that Alistair Overeem is taking on Stipe Miocic. Stipe Miocic, when he won that title, he told the whole world it's the power that he possesses. He's a better boxer than what Alistair Overeem is. Alistair Overeem is a kickboxer who subsequently will leave his shots open to get countered back. He hasn't faced anybody with the power that Stipe Miocic has. That's the thing that's interesting, because you look at Alistair Overeem's resume in the UFC. He's been KO'd or TKO'd by lesser-known strikers in the division. He's been TKO'd via strikes by Ben Rothwell. He's been knocked out by Travis Hopper Brown. He's been knocked out by Antonio Bigfoot. He's been knocked out by who's who of the weakest striker division. So if he's coming in to play with the big boys and Stipe Miocic, he needs to bring his A game and make sure that chin is made of steel, because Stipe Miocic is going to put his fist on that chin. But also, the thing that boggles my mind again is, here we've got two heavyweights. Two heavyweights. What's the downfall of all heavyweights?
Their cardio.
Alistair Overeem's not ready to go five rounds. Stipe Miocic is not ready to go five rounds. This fight will go no more than three rounds before somebody gasses out and goes, oxygen. It's going to be a tough night with I see Stipe Miocic walking out with his hand raised. Then it was Brock my attention in the chat room that at the end of the day was the one fight I kind of overlooked on this card because it's like, really? This card is on pay-per-view? This card should have been on Fox Sports. This card should have been on Fox Network on free TV. Because you know what you could have got for rating-wise? With people wanting to tune in to watch CM Punk in his first debut because he's the third fight of the night? You could have blown the ratings out of the roof and maybe doubled, if not tripled, what Bellator has done with their specials. And yet you go ahead and put this on pay-per-view. And I kind of went, you know what, I'm over this. But then it was brought up in the chat room that, well, Uriah Faber's on the card. Wow. Didn't see that one. I was like, how did I overlook that one? I didn't. He's facing a premium prospect in the bantamweight division named Jimmy Rivera. This cat is as real as they come. But let's talk about Uriah Faber for a minute. I'll get right to Jimmy Rivera. Uriah Faber is 36. We're almost there. We know what that is like. Especially me. But when you look at Uriah Faber, 37 years old, Sean, I remember this cat in WEC. Remember? He used to be this cool kid, the California kid, the one that everybody wanted to be around, that energetic personality. And yet, now you're like, well, where's that kid? He's that kid that's at the bar with your buddies, with your friends, that guy that you want to hang out with. He's no longer that caliber of a fighter he was when he was in his early 30s and mid-20s. He's no longer that fighter. And he's not that convincing fighter that shoots in for that takedown and ultimately gets it. He's the unsured fighter. The guy that wonders, well, can I get him down or am I going to try to outstrike him? What's going to happen at the end of the day? That's the interesting situation you're at with Uriah Faber. And you've got a brute in Jimmy Rivera sitting across from him. It'll be interesting to see, again, how he continues to try to adapt to the changing of the guard. He's ranked number 2 in the UFC. Jimmy Rivera is ranked number 12 in the UFC. How is Uriah Faber still ranked in the top 5? It's truly amazing when you look at Uriah Faber and how far he has fallen. It's a guy named Rivera who hasn't lost since 2008. A prospect. If he beats Faber, he jumps into the top 10 in my opinion. Oh, no doubt, because you beat the number 2 guy in the division. But now here's the question. What does that mean to Uriah Faber's career at the age of 36? Call it. I've been saying that he needed to call it a career when he lost his last fight. I get that there are some fighters that just makes them want to go. But at some point, when your people start to disappear from you and you start to get a little bit longer in the tooth, there is some point in time that you have to be able to call it the end and pass it off because you've got Garbrandt, who should, in theory, be ranked in the top 5, going after Dominic Cruz. But he should be there. But see, Garbrandt, he's a guy that is very misunderstood. But who do you have next if you look at Garbrandt, if he does not get a Dominic Cruz? Where do you go from there? And we'll shut up in our Facebook, and we're going to get to that too because we're going to talk about Joe Silva. Oh, yeah, fight book. We got a whole thing planned on the rankings. Trust me on that one. That's coming up. It's funny how us and Fightbook were so in sync with what we want to talk about and what we want to get across to the fight fans. It's uncanny sometimes. So that's why we enjoy talking with the guys over at Fightbook.
It is. We are the Sports Warriors right here on YouTube and on Blog Talk Radio. We have the realest talk
the realest opinions, we just shatter that mold. We break that mold in what everybody classified as your media personalities. We break that mold. UFC 203 is going to come down to the wire. You're going to see movement and shakings going on in that car. Plain and simple. Whether you can or you don't. So, we're going to go into a break, and then we're going to come out of it. And by that, we're going to talk about the retirement of Joe Silva, what he had to say, what that means for the future of the UFC. We are the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan Ducross. On my side, as always, my partner in crime, the one and only, Sean Ducross. So, Tristan, coming up, like you said, Joe Silva leaving the UFC, really. And then also the fallout of UFC Fight Night 93. Yeah, that happened overseas, right? Sit tight, grab a water, and we'll go about a business here in a minute.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are the Sports Warriors. Real talk, real opinions going down on Blog Talk Radio as well as on YouTube. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at the Ducross Bros. Hit us up on our Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
Subscribe to us on YouTube. Hit that red button right there,
right underneath your name. It says subscribe. Just go ahead, click that. There you go. Click it. Go. Click it. Right? Click it?
Yes.
Click it. Click it! You know you want to. In the meantime, Sean, the unexpected retirement of Joe Silva sends what I would classify as shockwaves through the MMA community, good and bad, because now everything is out in the open. Joe Silva was the man behind the curtain. Joe Silva was the man that never was really about the TV camera.
Was never about the limelight.
Right.
Hid in the shadows and did what he needed to do, much like Batman.
Wait, he was like Batman?
He was like Batman.
I thought he was more like Robin. Oh, wait, no, that's Sean Shelby.
There you go. Sean Shelby, Joe Silva, Batman, and Robin. Because when you needed him the most, Joe Silva came out of the shadows and he was there to show the world what a great matchmaker he was.
And at this point in time, Bruce Wayne's parents of the UFC was killed and murdered, so it's time for him to move on. Yeah, you know you like that one.
I'm trying to get that analogy. That's just a weird one. But we'll go.
The Zuffa brothers are no longer running the UFC.
The Fertitta brothers.
Yeah.
True, true.
His parents were killed, murdered in the alley. Time to move on. Silva saw the writing on the wall. It was done.
Said, peace, I'm out. Chicken grease.
You know, he said that, here we go for our guys that are in the chat room and the people that are watching around the world and listening to us on Blog Talk Radio. The rankings don't mean anything, and that's one reason why the man has left the building. Silva won't go to Bellator, foe.
They got Rich Chill.
True. He's better than Joe Silva. Oops, did
I just say that? I wouldn't say he's better than Joe Silva.
He's getting there.
He's getting there with the help of Scott Coker. But I believe that we will see the end of Joe Silva.
Joe Silva's done.
Because he's got nothing left. The company sold for $4 billion. He's got his payday. He bailed out. He's going to go sit back and read his books that he was so accustomed to doing over the course of decades.
He's going to sip a Mai Tai
on an island that he probably bought. He's going to go where he belongs, and that is out of the spotlight. You know, I remember when he went to a photo shoot with USA Today with Sean Shelby, and he didn't like it. Didn't want to be any part of it. Was quiet, soft-spoken. But he was a guy that was always straight to the point. Got the message across. That was him. He was like many people always classified him, he was the captain of the debate team. And it was one of those things that was phenomenal to see.
Kind of like what we are. Are we like Joe Silva?
Kind of. I mean, we love to debate. We lead that monster. So, I mean, it makes sense. But when you look at Joe Silva brought a lot to the table that a lot of people didn't know about. Like, a lot of people probably didn't know. In 2000, UFC was almost bought out by Dan Lambert from America Top Team.
Oh, my God. Just shoot me now.
And instead, he announced that, well, if you go ahead and Dan Lambert buys the UFC, he leaves. Ultimately, that didn't happen. UFC was sold to the Fertitta brothers. He's been with the UFC since 1993.
Folks, something like that's a long time.
Something like 20 years he's been matchmaking. That's why, to me, I don't see him going over to Bellator, even though it would make perfect sense with the way that MMA has gone.
And the way the landscape of MMA has turned,
has altered. So it would make perfect sense for him to leave being out of a job. It would make perfect sense that that's the type of move Scott Coker would make. Because Scott Coker is the insane businessman that he is.
But would he really shatter that friendship that he has with Rich?
If you get an opportunity at Joe Silva, you do that. Just like if Bryce Harper comes on to the free agent market or Mike Trout comes on to the free market, it doesn't matter if you got David Price as your ace. You make that trade. You make that financial offer to that individual because it's going to change the face and alter the game. Scott Coker is the mad scientist of mixed martial arts. He's unconventional. For crying out loud, he created Bellator kickboxing. He put MMA and kickboxing on mainstream TV for masses, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. He did that. He brought back Ken Shamrock. He brought back Royce Gracie. He would do something like that. But Joe Silva, he's loyal. He's shown from 1993 to 2016 how loyal he is.
Because that's what means everything to him.
But the things behind him, like, he created the Ultimate Fighter, not Dana White.
Dana White, nope.
Dana White wanted to create a reality TV show
around
himself called The American Promoter.
Shocking.
And instead, he's the one that said, well, why don't we create a platform for fighters and at the end of it, give them a contract to enter the UFC. He vetoed Dana White's idea, even though, granted, circa 2016, Dana White finally has his own vlog about basically the American Promoter, him going out looking for new fighters. But the brainchild of the Ultimate Fighter is that of, you've got the man, and Joe Silva.
And in season one, Joe Silva was single-handedly the man that handpicked every single fighter that was in season one. There's food for thought. That Stefan Bonner, Forrest Griffin, classic war? Joe Silva. He was the man behind that. What it means to Joe Silva and to the plate was that matchmaking is no joke. It's 24-7.
It's
on your phone. It is grueling. Your long nights, your long days. You're flying or you're dealing with borders of languages that are different that whether you can or cannot understand how you get across to whether or not what's a good fight and what's not a good fight.
Joe Silva. And here's another thing. If you guys didn't know, Joe Silva was the man that was the matchmaker. A lot of people think that he's a matchmaker for UFC. He is not the matchmaker for all of UFC. He is the matchmaker for the 155s and up. Sean Shelby, who was absorbed from WEC, is the man of 145 and down to the women's bantamweight division. Huh. That makes plenty of sense as to why those divisions are rinse and repeat. He believes that there's not a lot of talent out there. Okay. So there's two actual matchmakers, and now Joe Silva is gone. It's going to be all Sean Shelby. So what does that mean to the rankings? We see that UFC, what, the 205 card that just came out?
Yeah.
Chris Weidman versus Yoel Romero? Really? You're gonna award a steroid user against a potential title holder? Really? That's what we're doing? Donald Cerrone? Let's bump him up in the rankings to give him a title shot against Robbie Lawler.
Well, Robbie Lawler is in the champ. Robbie Lawler lost to Tyrone Woodley.
Well, yeah, that's right. But, you know, you're going to put Donald Cerrone against Robbie Lawler.
A fight that should have happened 2 years ago.
Right. Not now. Donald Cerrone's still been scratching and clawing to get to the top. And you're going to put him against Robbie Lawler. Come on. That doesn't make any sense. You know, you have these rankings for a reason. If you're going to disregard the rankings, man, then why should we have rankings in the UFC?
And
why not do what Bellator's doing and just put on the best fights that are – that if a guy has a two-fight win streak, you're fighting the next guy. Okay. Regardless if you're good or not, you're getting that fight.
I mean, look at Derek Campos in Bellator. He's 2-3 in the last five fights. The guy's getting a guy who's on a 7-fight win streak in Jamil Chan. If he wins that, that catapults him right back into the game. But you talk about the rankings. I was trying to piece this together a little bit because my thought on the rankings, here's how the rankings should be for the masses. Okay, rankings, in most common sense, is that it should be based on your record. But if it was based on your record, Tony Ferguson would have had a fight a long time ago.
Right, El Cucuy.
Donald Cerrone would have had a title fight a long time ago.
Liz Carmouche. Where is she?
She would have had a title contender fight a long time ago or a rematch.
Like, are you kidding me? She was the only one that if Ronda Rousey didn't bite her on the choke and she didn't slide up high, you would have had a new champion in Liz Carmouche, but yet she's sitting on the sidelines for how long now?
Right.
Almost a little over a year, sitting on the sidelines, hungry, more determined than ever, but yet she hasn't even got a shot.
But why not? If you're so worried about everybody selling a fight, if you're worried about, oh, well, this person gets this opportunity at a title fight because, you know what, he can talk. He can sell that fight. So then why not make your rankings based on two criteria? Your ability to sell a fight and what your record is. Why are we basing your rankings on what your record is and who you fought rather than what's going on? Because at the end of the day, prime example of how whack the UFC rankings are is what I just said about 2 minutes ago. UFC's Uriah Faber is ranked number 2.
How about the man that is attached to Misha Tate, Brian Caraway? How's he still in the top? Explain this to... Oh, right. Because he's with Misha Tate. Regardless of how he performs, he still gets catapulted to the top. I don't like... When you see the rankings and basically you spit on them, I agree that there should be two criterias. That let's call a spade a spade and let's look at that. Demetrius Johnson doesn't do anything to bring anything to the table. Can't sell a pay-per-view, can't bring in buyers, can't bring in It can't bring in sales on merchandise. Can't bring in ratings on free TV. Well, he's your champ.
What we should do is get with Fightbook and create our own ranking.
Yes.
And show the world what real rankings would look like if it actually meant something. Because it's baloney in what they look at.
The round table of the Sports Warriors with Roberto for the ultimate rankings. The only true rankings that really would matter would be ours. Just saying.
That put us on a pedestal like no other thing.
I want to stand on my soapbox.
Like you are right now?
Yes. My soapbox is high. This is a guy that went from nowhere to somewhere in a matter of a heartbeat. Changed the game. Now he's leaving a game that he helped change because it's changing not for the better. But we've seen it across this platform multiple times that MMA wants to be mainstream. Yet, man, you can't. You can't make anything mainstream if you don't see the issues that are in front of you.
You've got to take off the blinders at some point. And that's the thing that's been...
Free agency is real. Free agency is real, folks. Rory McDonald just proved that. Donald Cerrone almost did that. Dana White had to put on knee pads to get on his knees to get Donald Cerrone back.
Oh, I went there. I'm just going to let that one slide.
That is the reality of the situation that we are in. They need to take off the blinders. Joe Silva's gone. Rory's gone. Free agents are coming and going. You're getting older in the tooth. The younger guys are going to Bellator, WSOF. Titan FC is still around. Even though it's underneath the UFC umbrella, they're still there. Like, if there isn't drastic changes coming, there's a downfall in the UFC's horizon. It is coming. And when it comes, it's not going to be like the tumbleweed going through the town. It's going to be a tsunami coming through from the ocean. And it won't be something so easy and fixable. Because you must grab it right now and hone it and understand. Listen to the fans. Listen to your fighters.
It took WWE 5 years before they finally listened to the WWE universe and gave the fans what they wanted.
No more thick, burly guys that are jacked up on steroids. No, they went to littler guys, more exciting guys, the guys that could talk, the guys that could sell pay-per-views, that could sell
the guys
merchandise.
That can wrestle.
Right. It's not all about what it is as an organization. It's about what the fans want to see. It's about the product that you put out there. At some point, my dude, you have to get it. You have to.
You have to figure it out. But one thing I didn't think anybody really figured out was, why would you put on
Excelsior in Paris, Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound, get ready for an MMA showdown. Now the Ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.